It's time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101, and as always, we welcome in Bruce Pratt, who's not really need to be welcomed in. He's been here since the top of the show, but it's a formality. We do it anyway. Hello again, Bruce.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Carrie. It's always good to hear your voices. And looking for, I got my first shot the other day, so I'm looking forward to the day we can all be back in the studio.
Yeah, that'll be a good time indeed. Although I do like having the space, but I don't mind. I don't mind giving up that space for you,
well,
Bruce.
Well, I've lost 15 pounds working out and eating during the pandemic and eating right, so that there'll be less of me to take up space.
Wow. You're like the only person I know that's lost weight during the pandemic.
It's because I've always been sort of contrary, and I took a look at myself and I said, I'm going the direction I don't want to go. I'm going to change this. So I've been a madman for the last month.
Good for you. Well played, sir. Now I just want to see even more and see the fruits of your labors there.
Well, we'll get there at some. A little more to go. I'm exactly 2 pounds more than I ran track my senior year in high school. And I was much more muscled then. So I think I got to get down below that. But I'm getting where I want to be.
Very nice. Well, good work. Excellent. Today we're talking about a book by our old friend Bob Walsh, who I always liked Bob when he was coaching at Maine. And I was thinking about this, Bruce. You know, Maine really, over the years, Maine's had some pretty cerebral coaches when you think about it. I look at Richard Barron in that way. I mean, they're all good coaches and very smart. But even Nick Charlton, maybe because he was a philosophy major, that I think sometimes they're able to see the bigger picture a little bit and also understand that X's and O's are great, but success in athletics most often comes down to the ability to communicate with and motivate athletes.
Absolutely. And I was thinking about another connection. Bob Walsh was when he was at Rhode Island College, which I'll talk about in a minute. He did something amazing when you look at the numbers and the situation. Ricky Reichenbach has been the Hockey East Women's Coach of the Year. Tim Whitehead was the Spencer Penrose National Coach of the Year. And what do they all have in common? The same alma mater as Eric Meehan. There's something about people, I guess, from Hamilton College that get that kind of thing. But you're right. What Bob talks about in his book is really important, because there's nothing worse than going to some bombastic person's lecture on leadership and hearing them tell you how they know everything about how to lead, as opposed to Bob, whose book guides you towards ways to perhaps, when you're in a position where you need to be a leader, to see the clearest path to it. And I thought the best thing in the book, and there's so many good things, is when he said, if the players aren't buying into the program, may not be the players.
Right,
you know, we think
right.
about that all the time. Well, the players need to buy in. The defense needs to buy into the system. A lot of times it's not who buys in, but it's how it's explained to them to get them to buy in. And I was thinking back to a New Year's Eve where Bob and Alicia had invited Janet and I and some other people that were faculty liaisons and coaches to their house. And Red and Janet Gendron were there, and Bill DeSisto was there. I don't remember everyone who was there, but we were talking, and I was telling a story about when I was coaching football, watching a coach try to tell a kid to do something over and over the same way, and I could tell he wasn't getting it. And the kid was very smart. The kid has gone on to do very well, like a very smart kid. And I finally tapped the coach on the shoulder. I said, let me try. And I explained it slightly differently based on me watching what was happening, and the kid got it right away. Didn't mean that I was smarter or I was a better leader, but I was watching and I was listening when the other coach was talking. And that's one of the things I really like. Bob said, you have to pay attention to what the players are saying back to you, because if you want a certain answer and you don't get it and you haven't really heard what that player said, you're not being a good leader. You're just being a martinet.
Well, and you and I have both coached. We've both been in education for a long time, and things have changed even from when I started in education and in coaching. And yeah, when I first got going, there were still a lot of those autocratic coaches out there that my way or the highway, and I'm right because I'm the coach, and that's all there is to it, and you speak only when spoken to. And that had its place, I guess, but that kind of thing rarely works today, and it's got to be a cooperative effort. And players need to know why you're doing the things you're doing. And it's important, I think, for successful coaches, just like successful educators, to be transparent, to explain, here's why we're doing this. This is our goal. Here's how we'll know when we've achieved our goal.
Yeah, and that's, and you know, I remember being at a men's basketball practice when Bob was the head coach at Maine, and they were getting ready to do a drill that they had not done before. He said, this is a brand new drill, and let me tell you why we're doing this. Not, this is a brand new drill, and this is how you do it. This is why we're doing it, before you tell somebody how to do it. And I agree with you. It was a time when coaches just said, okay, line up. The next thing I want you to do is X, without explaining its relevance to the game or what's going on, which makes it more difficult for the athlete to understand. And when you think about what Bob did at Rhode Island College, this is pretty amazing, right? At Rhode Island College is a public institution in Providence that is primarily a commuter school that does not attract an elite, that does not attract many people from the economic elite of Rhode Island. Prior to him arriving there, they had a 397 winning percentage overall, 355 in the conference, and they were 4-7 postseason. They never won a title, a tournament title. They had won one title in the league. He was there for 9 years. He went 204-63, which is a 77.764 winning percentage. That's phenomenal. A 0.822 in the conference. His postseason record had a .739, and he had 10 NCAA tournament wins and in 8 tournaments, 6 Little East Conference titles, and 6 Little East tournament titles. This is at a commuter school where he can't offer scholarships, where he cannot offer, you know, we'll get you into this dormitory, cannot offer anything other than, I will work as hard as I can, if you work as hard as you can, to succeed. And that's why I put so much stock in the things that he talks about, because how do you convince kids? You've got, if they're good, they've got URI nearby, they've got Providence College nearby, they've got all kinds of places they can play basketball in Southern New England. There are schools, private schools, that can offer them, if not scholarships, certainly great grants and aid, which the public school, commuter school like this can't. The fact that he was able to do that in that environment is, I think, really, really phenomenal. And the great thing about this book is he takes you through their last championship season. And he talks about the things he did correctly. He talks about the mistakes that he made. He always talks about the way you have to support your athletes. And there's no fatuousness to this book. And so often those leadership books are, you know, when I was in charge, the one thing I knew I had to do. He puts all that aside. You know, that's the Urban Meyer myth, right?
Right.
You
right.
get all the best players in the world. Let me cheat and do whatever I want to do. I can win. Yeah, you know what? I can too.
I think I was struck by a section early in the book when Bob talked about the value of separation. When the season ended,
yes.
Getting away from players and giving them a break from you.
Yeah, I thought about, there was a kid, I won't mention his name, who was a pretty good basketball player, John Bass, and he wanted to play 3 sports. And he was convinced, and this was not Bob Cymbalek, as people think it was, by somebody else, that he needed to play basketball all year round, every day. And he got into a very prestigious small liberal arts college. And he went there and assuming that he would be a star basketball player, and he was okay. Because he'd been, in a sense, set up to fail, right? If he were to play all year round and you'd be with me every 10 minutes, you're going to be a great player. He was good, but he wasn't that good. And so when he became a fairly good player at a Division III school, he quit. He gave it up. And I think that's really, you hit that section right where it is. You need the separation. The kids need to know they have a life beyond basketball. When it is basketball, you want them engaged and you want them doing what they need to do. But when it's not basketball, they don't need to be thinking about you every 5 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, he talks in the book about the fact that ultimately, this has to be what they want. This has to be their team. And yes, you're the coach, you're the person in charge, but they've got to buy in completely. And that comes through communication and by always having that door open and not having anything off the table. There can't be things, and I know, you know, coaches, well, I'll talk about anything except playing time. Well, why wouldn't you talk about playing time? That's like a teacher saying, I'll talk about everything except your test grade. I'm not going to talk about test grades with you.
Yeah, and I thought, I remember having a private conversation once with Bob on just that point. I said how I wouldn't talk to a parent about playing time unless I'd had the discussion with the student first or the athlete first. That, you know, I don't want mom and dad calling me and ask me why so-and-so isn't playing. If they think they deserve to play more, I want them to feel to come to me. But as Bob pointed out, but they have to believe they can come to you and get a fair hearing. And that's, you know, that's a big difference. And I thought about it and I thought, gee, I hope I always did that, but I wonder if I did. And you know, I think so much of what's in this book is about sports, but as you and I both know from reading it, it's about education. It's about
yes.
how you teach.
Right, because as you know, in any kind of organization, well, how do you get students to achieve? You empower them to take charge of their own education and make good decisions. How do you run a successful organization? By building a community of other decision makers. But you have to trust, as the leader of that organization, you have to be willing to accept other people's decision, in this case, the decisions of your players, and go with that. And yeah, there are times when one person needs to make a decision because time is of the essence. But if you build a good culture, it's a culture where people, everybody on your team or in your organization, grows in their confidence. So you're not the only person making decisions. Everybody's involved. And when you got that buy-in, the payoff is often much greater.
Yes. My one real memory of doing this outside of sports, I used to be the president of a small volunteer fire department in Connecticut, and people weren't showing up for Tuesday and Sunday drills when they should and this and that. So at a monthly meeting, I said, what do you guys want to do for drills? What are the things you think you need to bone up on or to know or to learn? And we just heard from all the new members all the things that they had never done. And we realized that all the old guys have been sitting around doing what we already knew how to do. And everything changed. And I think that taught me more about teaching and taught me more about coaching than probably anything in either of those spheres. But you've got to listen to your players. You got to talk to them. You got to know something about them. You know, Bob and I have talked about it. And Richard Barron and I have talked about this. Some of the greatest moments are when you're talking to your athletes about something other than the sport you're coaching, where you develop those bonds. And we talked to Samantha Tabor, who's a doctor in Berlin, to go to BAPS. My greatest memory of Sam has nothing to do with her as a runner, but a day that we were sitting talking and she and Katie Rice were explaining to me the difference between center of gravity and center of mass when teaching the long jump, because I didn't understand the difference because I'm not a science guy. And I laugh whenever I talk to either of the two of them now to think back that was one of the great learning moments for me. And it was track, but I was learning physics.
We're talking with Bruce here, Bruce Pratt, about Entitled to Nothing, An Uncommon Approach to Leadership, a new book from former Maine Black Bear basketball coach Bob Walsh. And one of the challenges that coaches face, obviously, the first one is building success, finding that level of success. But then perhaps the greater challenge is continuing that success and finding a way to remain at an elite level. And that's largely based on the culture that you build along the way, according to Bob.
And, you know, I thought, yeah, and he said something in the book that made me, I actually shouted out loud, yes, Coach Walsh. You know, every coach's job is to recruit the best players he or she can recruit, as long as they're good people, right?
I mean,
we're not talking about the Urban Meyers of the world, but your job. And so if you have a good team and you're trying to make it better, it's possible you're going to recruit new players who have even more skill than the players you have. And if you can do that and keep your team together and have everybody pulling with their oars in the water, you know, at the same time, rowing the boat, as B.J. Fleck and Joe Harris-Simigak and Joe Rossi would say out at Minnesota, you've really done something. But you have to let the kids on your team know that you're going to try and recruit the best players you can recruit. You can't blindside them. My son was a Division I football player at Lafayette, and one year the head coach, someone whose name I will never mention, went and pulled all the freshmen and put them up on a small stage and turned to the rest of his team and said, "These guys are all better than you are. They're here to take your job." I thought, what a way to build team chemistry, yeah. Right? Telling people these are the people that are going to replace you. So maybe what do? Maybe just leave. I mean, that to me was one of the dumbest things I'd ever heard a coach do until I learned more about that particular coach. Bob's whole message about being honest, being upfront, don't hide stuff from the kids, but at the same time, don't expect them to digest it all at once either.
Right. But yeah, and just what you were talking about, and I had dog-eared that page because I thought it was so great when he talked about letting players know that the team is a meritocracy. And he says, I emphasized there would always be a lot of talent in the program, and we were going to continue to upgrade that talent. I reminded them I was recruiting over them. I made no bones about it. My job was always to find better players for the program. Their job was to get better.
Yeah, and then in what you said before about it, how to maintain the success, where he says, handling success is something you have to prepare for intentionally. It can be harder than handling failure. And I thought to myself, mm-hmm. I wish I would have had many fewer sleepless nights as a track coach, because, you win two or three in a row and you're favored to win the fourth one. If you don't win the fourth one, you feel like you have failed.
Right. 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 And those other three don't matter anymore.
Right. And I can remember going the year after I retired as the head track coach, and my friend Joe Capehart took over, the Baps girls came in second in the state by like 4 or 5 points. And Chris Libby had done a fabulous job with Arno, who won. And the kids were like crushed. And I said, do you know how many people woke up this morning saying, man, if we could be second in the state, wouldn't that be great? I'm not telling you to accept losing. Just say, okay, well, we did our best, we lost. But to understand that to continue success, if you're one or two for 12 or 13 years, done a pretty damn good job.
Well, yeah, team success begins with individual success. And generally, if every individual on the team improves over the course of a season, then the team itself will improve. But you have to reward yourself for those individual successes and hope that they translate eventually into more of that and more team success.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Maine play on television when Bob was the coach, they were playing Northern Illinois. And they were already down. They had 3 or 4 injuries, and they didn't have a full complement of guys. And they were in foul trouble late. And they had a lead, and you could tell it was going away. He never stopped coaching. If a kid fouled out, he gave him a hug. He patted him on the back. He clapped. He kept coaching. I saw Maria Lewis do this when she was the coach of the Maine women's hockey team when they didn't have a lot of talent. They kept coaching. They never got that bad sideline demeanor, the slouch posture, the crossed arms, the, oh, look what's happening to us. And I was talking I can't remember his name, Beal, Garrett Beal. Is that his name?
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah.
At a function. And I mentioned, he heard me talking about that, and he turned to me and he said, he's like that. He keeps coaching. And I thought, I guess you won that battle, Coach.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's a wonderful book entitled To Nothing, An Uncommon Approach to Leadership by Bob Walsh. And once basketball season is through for Bob and the Providence Friars, we'll have him on to talk with us about the book.
We sure will. And we've got the next 2 weeks, we're in hockey. We've got A Mighty Oak, which you and I both have, Jeff Benn's book. And we'll be talking to Jeff, I think this is perfect, on St. Patrick's Day.
That's wonderful. Outstanding stuff.
Right. I think with that book on St. Patrick's Day is perfect.
There you go.